stands at over 65,100. Hezbollah's Secretary General has warned that pressuring the resistance only benefits Israel, and its elimination would leave regional nations vulnerable.
The resistance, or the weapons of the resistance, are focused on the Israeli enemy, not Lebanon or Saudi Arabia, not anywhere else in the world. And this has been proven practically on the ground, and we continue to be on this path. Putting pressure on the resistance is a pure victory, a victory for Israel. And when the resistance isn't present, this means that the country's turn will come. Even the resistance in Palestine is part of this resistance, which is considered to be a front preventing Israeli expansionism.
Sheikh Naim Qassem reaffirmed that the Lebanese resistance movement will not lay down arms. He warned that the regime's prime minister is pursuing an expansionist vision for a greater Israel, which aims to redraw the map of the region. The Hezbollah leader pointed to recent Israeli strikes, including one in Qatar, saying that it exposed the regime's inevitable project and sent a clear message to regional nations. Sheikh Naim Qassem called for unity and dialogue among the countries in the region to confront the regime's threats as a common enemy. The Committee to Protect Journalists has reported that 31 journalists and media workers were killed in Israeli airstrikes on a newspaper complex in Yemen last week. The September the 10th strike targeted offices of the newspaper 26th of September and Yemen Daily in the capital Sana'a. At least 22 journalists were also injured in the attacks. The regime's army claimed that it had struck military targets belonging to the Ansarullah resistance movement. The attack marked the deadliest single strike on the press since 2009, when 32 journalists were killed in an attack in Philippines' southern province of Maguindanao. Since the beginning of its genocidal war on Gaza in 2023, Israel has also killed hundreds of journalists in the Palestinian territory and Lebanon. In Sana'a, thousands rallied again this Friday against Israel and its allies, with strong warnings directed at Saudi Arabia.
Yemeni and Palestinian flags draped the 70 square as hundreds of thousands rallied in solidarity with Palestine, condemning U.S. and Israeli genocide in Gaza. Protesters also condemned Saudi Arabia and warned the kingdom of the dangers if it sides with Israel in any military operations against Yemen.
The Yemeni people are standing with Palestine against disgrace and humiliation. We are here in direct defiance against the U.S. and Israel, and we also send a warning to Saudi Arabia that if it gets involved in helping any of our enemies at sea, we will also deal with them.
Protesters also vowed that past Yemeni strikes prove Yemen's ability to hit back against Israel, U.S., and Saudi Arabia, if necessary.
From this field of jihad, we tell the Zionists and the Americans that we will never fear your bombings on us. We will also send a message to those traitors, especially Saudi Arabia. Do not make the mistake of entering a battle you are not prepared for. Take heed of what we did to your Aramco facilities in the previous wars.
We condemn the failed Arab summit. They are only puppets of US and Israel. We in Yemen stand firm as a mountain with our leader, and we will continue to attack by land, air, and sea against all enemies.
Yemenis are hoping for the best, but are preparing for the worst, an all-out battle with Israel and all its allies if the aggressions continue.
Yemen has stepped up its military operations, not only in support of Gaza, but to prevent what many believe is Israel's ultimate plan to take over parts of West Asia if the regime is not stopped immediately. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
The Israeli regime has launched new drone strikes on southern Lebanon. A drone strike targeted a vehicle near a hospital in Tibnin municipality. It left one person dead and nearly a dozen others wounded. The identities of the victims have not yet been released. A separate drone strike took place at a village in Nabatea province, killing one person. Israel launches attacks on Lebanon despite a ceasefire being in place since November. The Lebanese government has time and again slammed the regime for undermining the country's sovereignty. Protesters have gathered at the new Amazon Web Services headquarters in Cape Town to voice their opposition to the company's collaboration with Israel. Beyond condemning Amazon's support for the Israeli regime, activists argue that the company's expanding presence in Africa facilitates the spread of Israeli surveillance and spying across the continent.
Amazon Web Services is complicit in the driving of genocidal tech in the occupied territories, shows a particular a combination that simply cannot be ignored, that these multinational corporations are enacting not just genocidally, but in the same mindset as colonial powers did, as the Dutch East India Company did.
The Israeli government gave Google and Amazon a contract worth $1.2 billion called Project Nimbus, and that has enabled the Israeli government to have endless data services. They have been able to get surveillance and technology, AI technology, to surveil Palestinians. There are a couple of programs baked into that, like Lavender and Where's Daddy?
The Israeli occupation force, okay. They are one of the most tech-hungry, you know, armies in the world. They use the computing power that companies like Amazon provide, you know, and the kind of algorithms that they help fine-tune on these things to target where the bombs are going to fall. So they are directly an enabling technology. I mean, just like, you know, a tank cannot run without petrol, this modern warfare cannot run without this high technology infrastructure that companies like Google and Amazon and Microsoft are providing.
The International Court of Justice has confirmed that Brazil has now joined South Africa in its lawsuit against Israel, accusing the country of committing genocide in Gaza. Brazil is signatory to the 1948 Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide, cited its rights under Article 63 of the Convention. The lawsuit accuses Israel of violating the Genocide Convention through its actions in Gaza. South Africa originally brought the case on December 29, 2023, highlighting Israel's ongoing violations and calling for justice. Since then, the court has issued provisional measures demanding that Israel take immediate steps to prevent further acts of genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. The UN Security Council has rejected a bid to keep sanctions relief for Iran, paving the way for renewed UN sanctions within days. Iran has slammed the move, calling any attempt by the European trio to reimpose sanctions baseless and a direct assault on international law.
Iran implemented the deal in full and in good faith. No other nation has ever subjected itself to such rigorous, intrusive verification by IAEA. We kept our words, the EU, E3, and US did not. It was the United States that unilaterally tore up the agreement in 2018, imposing sanctions in open defiance of this council. It was the E3 that failed to meet their obligation, hiding behind empty promises while quietly following Washington's lead and instructions.
Iran's ambassador to the UN, Amir Said Erivani, emphasized that in a striking display of hypocrisy, the European trio and the US claimed that Tehran must be punished for measures it took only years after enduring their violations. The three European countries triggered the snapback process last month, accusing Iran of breaching uranium limits set by the 2015 nuclear deal. That mechanism, which is set to expire on October 18th, allows any JCPOA participant to restore UN sanctions unless the Council votes to stop it. If no deal is reached by September the 28th, international sanctions suspended under the nuclear deal will automatically return. Political activist Mohsen Naghavi earlier told us that Iran has been clear about the rollback of its obligations in compliance with the 2015 nuclear deal. He said it is Western governments and not Iran that violated the deal.
Iran's position is quite clear. Like, they consider this attempt by these three European states to reinstate annulled UN Security Council sanctions as unlawful, unjustified, and provocative, this action in itself, it undermines basic norms of diplomacy at a very sensitive time when the world should be working towards peace and de-escalation and not escalation, you know? And because their claim is so baseless, the JCPOA, it's a multilateral agreement. And it's been endorsed by the UN Security Council in the past. And the US withdrew unilaterally in 2018, as we all know. And the US are who violated the deal. And since then, Iran has remained in compliance with its safeguards, its obligations under the IAEA. And instead of addressing the violations and illegal attacks by the US and the Zionist regime against Iran's safeguarded nuclear facilities under IAEA, the E3 are abusing the JCPOA's mechanism to impose pressure on Iran. That is in itself a double violation.
Iran has strongly condemned France, Germany, and the United Kingdom for a provocative and unlawful action at the UN Security Council. In a statement, Iran's foreign ministry warned that if the move leads to the return of sanctions, the full responsibility will lie with the United States and its European allies. The ministry said the push to revive sanctions lacked consensus and faced serious opposition from several council members, calling it a blow to diplomacy and a threat to the global non-proliferation regime. Meanwhile, Iran's foreign ministers held a phone call with the Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency. The minister criticized the, quote, politicized atmosphere at the IAEA Board of Governors meeting, stressing that Iran's cooperation with the agency remains within international regulations. He said Iran does not accept any political action or unfair pressure that could lead to an escalation of tensions. In the US, Donald Trump's popularity continues to drop amid increasing economic and cultural chaos. The recent assassination of a high-profile conservative has many in the nation reeling and resentful amid high prices and high unemployment. Robin Mazzari reports from Washington, D.C.
A new poll shows that President Donald Trump is losing the support of the largest unofficial political party in the United States, independent voters. A latest top survey found that 57% of all Americans now disapprove of Trump's performance, a record low for his second term. Trump's approval could fairly be said to be at its lowest point in either of his two terms. His net approval rating of minus 18 points is the second lowest ever recorded for him, and many pollsters disregard the accuracy of a minus 21 approval rating recorded in November 2017.
I think there's so much going on that it's really hard to even start. But one of the biggest things is he just keeps skirting the line of what's appropriate. And every single time that he gets closer to that line, getting towards inappropriate, he's just getting so close. And everyone knows the game that he's playing. And the game that he's playing is, how much can I get away with? And nobody likes that.
I didn't approve of him when he came in for the second term, but... Certainly his attacks on our freedoms, attacking organizations like this who are standing up and speaking against him. And, of course, what he's doing, under the guise of, undocumented immigration and detaining people without cause and just all the, all the rhetoric.
Trump's low approval rating is also being attributed to the recent assassination of an Islamophobic but very popular right-wing commentator, which many are calling a watershed moment in increasingly violent American politics.
The assassination has led to increased calls for anti-Trump protesters to be stopped, arrested, investigated, and even deported. That has many accusing the administration of using McCarthyite tactics to silence freedom of speech.
I think a lot of people are afraid to come out. You know, you oppose Trump, you get primaried and knocked out of office, or you oppose Trump and you get a pizza sent to your house saying, I know where you and your wife and your kids live. And, it's just total dictatorship.
Despite being the richest country in the world, inequality in America is so rampant that a recent study found that 67% of workers live paycheck to paycheck. That's an almost 7% increase since just last year, and the poll only represents people who are employed. Last week, jobless claims hit a four-year high. Polls show that price inflation and jobs are the two most important issues for voters. Ramin Mazahiri, Washington, D.C.
Estonia says three Russian fighter jets have violated its airspace for 12 minutes in what the Eastern European country called an unprecedentedly brazen incursion. Estonia's government said three MiG-31 warplanes entered its airspace in a very clear act of provocation. The government also said it had summoned the Russian envoy to lodge a protest and deliver a note. Estonian Foreign Minister Margus Tsahkna separately called for a strong response from NATO. Just over a week ago, Poland also said around two dozen Russian drones violated its airspace. Moscow rejected that claim as a fabrication to derail Ukraine peace talks. And with that, we bring this news bulletin to an end. Thank you so much for staying on top of the news.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
Bazaar.
If you look around, nearly every object you see is made of raw material extracted from a mine. Basically, if you can't grow it, you have to mine it. The extraction of minerals, metals, and fuels from the ground is one of humankind's oldest industries. Never more than now has society been so dependent on greater variety and larger volumes of mined products. So it's no surprise that mining fuels our modern world and makes economies grow. Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. I'm your host Alireza Ikhtiarzadeh, and this week we will be exploring the mining industry while shining the spotlight on the machinery used in this sector. We wanted to see what types of machines are used and who is actively manufacturing them. Plus, we wanted to understand why the mining sector is crucial to the national economy and how manufacturers contribute to its progress. So, let's roll out the show. Our quest for answers led us to Shahrud city in Semnan province, where we visited a company specializing in manufacturing various mining machines. With nearly 20 years of experience, this knowledge-based company is active in a host of fields. It conducts research, development, and production of equipment needed in various industries. That being said, it also manufactures a variety of excavating, drilling, trenching, and digging machines. The life of any product begins in the design room. This company has researched and developed these machines and has perfected their performance. Optimizing the machine's size, speed, and power to carry out tasks has also reduced the expenses related to projects where these machines are used. These machines can be used in agriculture and road maintenance, among other medium-scale construction projects. Most materials needed to make these machines can be purchased inside Iran. Steel sheets, gears, wires, and whatever else is required to build the machine can be domestically found. And if a design requires a particular part, this company can make its own molds to create the parts. You might find it interesting that these machines are currently imported, as there is a high demand among mining companies for equipment. So indigenizing the production of mining machines has been a big step towards supporting this sector. Another benefit to local production is it saves the country millions by cutting back on imports. The beating heart of this knowledge-based company is its research and development department. Here is where all the magic happens. This area employs some of the most talented and experienced specialists to research, design products, and optimize existing ones. But that's not all. The research and development department also studies future projects. This company also dabbles in making equipment used to harness renewable energy. This company not only uses its own expert staff, but also stays up to date on the latest knowledge by maintaining links with the Industrial University of Shahrud. It collaborates with academic institutions and exchanges knowledge with them too. Furthermore, this knowledge firm also uses capacities and resources made available by Semnon Tech Park. Among its services, it offers the execution of projects through contracting. For example, it has used its machines to complete piping and installation of telecommunications manholes for intercity networks. Another example is carving drainage systems in agricultural fields using its trenchers. Over the years, this company has made a variety of award-winning machines, such as drilling machines equipped with fiber optic lights. Moreover, this company has invented 6 products that have been internationally patented. This knowledge-based manufacturer has never stopped eyeing the future and has plans to expand its production units and product portfolio in the coming years. The company we just mentioned is part of the puzzle that helps Iran's mining sector thrive. It is one of Iran's key industries, as the country is one of the top 10 mineral-rich nations globally. Roughly 7% of global mineral reserves can be found in Iran, making it one of the most important mineral producers in the world. Numbers from Iran's Trade Promotion Organization show that last year the sector saw a growth in exports. Government officials, however, say export figures could still be much higher. Furthermore, efforts have been placed on encouraging research and production in knowledge-based firms to increase specialized production, such as mining machines, in the market. And here is where knowledge-based companies play a big role. Okay, time for me to take a little break from here and divert your attention to a report that I made earlier in the week. Hey everyone, welcome to another special feature of Bazaar. Today we are discussing energy production, specifically electricity production through gas turbines and some of the problems that come with it. So at different times of the year, mainly during the summer, we get sporadic blackouts at one of the peak hours, let's say around 12 at noon until 4 to 5 p.m. Because we cannot store electricity, electricity production must always match electricity consumption. But because of the temperature during these hours, during this time of the year, during the summer, high temperatures in particular negatively affect electricity production through gas turbines. So first we're going to take a look at, well, why that is and how gas turbines work. And also, we believe that we have found a solution at Sharif Innovation Center, in one of the companies that has made that solution, and we're going to check that out too. Why do high temperatures negatively affect the performance of a gas turbine? Well, bear with me as I try to explain how a gas turbine works through this prototype that they have here. This is the prototype of the device that would be used at scale. This is not at scale. So this is, imagine this is the gas turbine. How it works is that it sucks air through these air ducts, and the temperature of that air is very important. I'm going to get back to that. The air goes through a compressor here. The compressor compresses the air, which we would need the compressed air for the combustion chamber. A combustion chamber essentially makes this work exactly like a plane engine or a car engine. A car engine is slightly different because the movement that it produces is linear, whereas the plane engine has rotary movement. So that's exactly what it is like, because it produces rotary movement. So in the combustion chamber, we add a certain type of gas to the compressed air, and then a little spark creates an explosion, and the explosion, the high pressure air, would then spin our turbines. And the turbines, which have movement in them, are connected to a generator, and the generator's job is to create, is to turn movement into electricity, which goes through the power grid and then gets to whoever needs it. Now, the thing here, the important thing about the air temperature is that we need ideal conditions, ideally, for the machine to work at peak performance. And that ideal condition is at sea level 15 degrees Celsius. So the air, ideally, is 15 degrees Celsius, but we don't get that kind of temperature in a lot of places, especially in a hot and dry climate. So we have a couple of options to alleviate that problem. Number one, the inefficient option, is to work the compressor a lot more, which would use a lot more energy, but that's not even the issue. The issue is that there's a lot easier of a way. So what they have found at TEPCO company is that they have instead tried to use an ice storage unit to work as a thermal storage compartment, because the thermal storage capacity of ice is 100 times more than that of the water. So here they create ice essentially at midnight until the morning, when no one is using the power and the air is colder, because that is what happens. The difference between temperatures during the day and temperatures during the night in dry climates is pretty massive. So it's a lot easier to create the ice during that time. So they do that so that in the morning or at noon during peak hours, 12 p.m. to like 4 or 5 p.m., they have the ice to cool the water that is in the storage, and the cooled water goes through a radiator behind the air duct, so that the air, the probably hot air that comes through the chamber, is cooled using the water that is in the ice storage compartment. That water cools the air down to like 15 degrees and gives us ideal conditions to work with, so the compressor doesn't need to work that hard. We get our ideal conditions through the ice storage unit, and that is how they are able to offset the amount of electricity that we would lose if we were to use the compressor a lot harder. And that's pretty much how a gas turbine works as well, but also this is the innovation here. A better way to cool the air and get a gas turbine to work at peak performance. Other less efficient methods of cooling the water that comes through the chamber. Both of them are called evaporative cooling. The first type is done through a wet media, most likely a cooling pad that you see in water coolers everywhere. So how it works is that there's a lot of surface and they run water through it, and the air is going to go through this cooling pad. So as the air goes through the cooling pad, the water absorbs the heat from the air and evaporates. Evaporation is an endothermic procedure, which is heat absorbing, which means that the heat is absorbed from the air and transferred to the water, which evaporates, making the air that runs through the cooling pad a lot cooler. This is a rather wasteful method because, well, you're using water, because in the method that I showed you, you don't use water. The water is just circulated back into the system. This one, you use water, and it's just generally not that efficient. The other method is even more inefficient. You see it in a lot of places in like outdoors restaurants. They spray water through the air that is going to go through the chamber, and the extremely tiny water droplets absorb the heat from the air and evaporate as they are sprayed.
This also absorbs heat from the air, and that is why when you go through the spray of water, you feel a cool breeze, because the air is a lot cooler, because its heat is transferred to the water molecules. So both of these methods are pretty inefficient, and I just wanted you to note about other methods that are used, but they are definitely more inefficient. And the chart is a demonstration of how our thermal storage system would perform in an actual 400 megawatt hour power plant system. When the ice is getting used during in midday, it bumps up the production by a difference of 60 megawatts in a regular 400 megawatt hour power plant. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for tuning in. It's bye for now.
The earth and the heavens begin to sing. The angels celebrate the birth of a king. A king who outshines the stars of the night. A beacon of hope. You guide us with your blessings of God upon you is my prayer. The earth and the heavens begin to sing. This day we celebrate the birth of a king.
This is A to Z. An Introduction into an Islamic Lifestyle. Today's lesson, not even recognized. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, welcome to A to Z here on Iron Bingus Radio with me, Sister Zainab. And this idea of not even recognized. So what I'm talking about is this idea that even though a person might be have a very important rank or post or job, there are times where not everyone knows who that person is, so they don't sort of physically recognize them. And that person also doesn't behave in such a way as to draw attention to themselves. And obviously this is, so what does this show us? So this shows us that, so a person who has a high rank but doesn't make a sort of big show of it, doesn't say, oh, I'm such and such, to sort of get, let's say, applause or praise or get special treatment from others, is obviously a very humble person. And this is the quality that we really need to, in a sense, emphasize and train in ourselves. And look, there are different, obviously different sorts of people who that we can look at to sort of see, well, okay, so what does that mean on the ground practically? How are these people behaving? Who are they? So if we look at any of our martyrs from active service, such as in martyrs from the Holy Defense, we find very beautiful stories. For example, one of the very famous martyrs from the Holy Defense, Dr. Mustafa Chamran. So some people, even when he was, I think this is when he was defense minister and he was just having lunch with his colleagues, obviously people would maybe not seen him, not sighted him, sort of like face to face, didn't know what he looked like. So there was a time when he was sat down having lunch with the other colleagues, and then one of the colleagues, who obviously had never met him before, said, well, when is the defense minister coming to join us? And obviously he was there, but he didn't draw attention to himself. Welcome back to A to Z here on Iron Bingus Radio with me, Sister Zainab. And obviously I'm talking about the trait of humility, that we do not draw attention to ourselves, even if we have a really important position or if we're a very rich person, whatever it is that we think is so special. But we don't try to distinguish ourselves. We don't try to make ourselves more important or better than others. And you know, this is something that we see also in martyrs of service. For example, the former president of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Shahid Raisi, he would, for example, because he was alongside his duties also serving as the imam of a mosque, and he would then after sort of prayer sometimes be seen just sat in the corner sort of talking with people about their issues. And yeah, and not everyone knew who this person was. It was just sat there on the floor in the corner of the mosque talking, because not everyone actually sort of recognized him. And yeah, this is a trait, obviously, that we need to sort of encourage in ourselves. And obviously, this is where it comes down to how do we behave? So if we have a post, whatever it is, many of us actually have roles in life where we think, maybe it's above someone else. So we then need to think, well, how do we behave on a day-to-day basis? Even when we meet people, and sadly, and this is a very typical behavior when we meet people, people sometimes ask us, oh, well, what do you do? What's your job? And then obviously we have to answer. So that's one thing. And maybe the job is actually quite high rank. But then what if we then ourselves, even without being asked, feel that we have to volunteer, that we have an important job? For example, assume you're top, or maybe even a school principal, and you have to sort of just volunteer that, oh, I'm a school principal. Well, yeah, is that really necessary? So I think this also calls for self-reflection, whether we ourselves try to draw attention to ourselves and what can we do to actually, you know, stop ourselves doing that. So inshallah, this is a reminder for all of us, and I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on Iron Bingish Radio, and farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality, culture, Eastern tales, roundtable discussions, politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In a hot night in the summer in the late 1930s, a teenage boy who had recently lost his father in a street fight saw a superhuman character in his dream who had replaced his father. Strong, smart, fast, and protector of security, a superhero that the crisis-stricken American society anxiously waited for so he'd rescue them from the economic problems and injustice of the 1930s.
Fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way.
Not many people thought that the dream of a teenager would be so influential and leave such a huge impact on the future of a country. The Americans of the 1930s were challenged with social and economic problems, injustice, and crime. They needed a source of power who could put an end to their crises. A superhuman solution should have been found for the problems apparently no human being could solve. That was how Superman, the first superhero of comic stories, became the solution to the crisis. It was a DC company that released the red and blue clad man stories for the first time and started the narratives of a superhero. Superman fought against injustice in American society, corrupt officials and gangsters, and supported the oppressed and miserable people. Every day, American weapons would stoke tensions in the war in Europe, and the U.S. in return would reap a huge economic benefit from selling weapons to the country involved in the war. Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor in the United States served as an excuse to push the public to support Washington's engagement in the war. At that time, Captain America was quite helpful in setting the stage for the U.S. to get involved in the war. All American superheroes fought alongside the U.S. Army against the villain forces who had threatened America. In a period of 20 years after propagating American values, about 78 million children were born during the baby boom. That generation always felt the shadow of a nuclear war. The baby boom generation had become teens who started their activities to take part in society and express their demands. They needed new heroes to shout their demands out loud. As a generation grew up, the crime rates among the youth during the 60s rose. They lived during an economic boost and would never understand their father's concerns. It was like that generation and their parents were born in two different countries and were in two different worlds. They voted for Kennedy as a young and handsome president. They loved the Beatles and gradually started hippie bands.
That's why these children are practicing to...
Hulk, a character who turns into a green monster due to atomic radiation, as he was repelled by society, he turned into a popular hero for the baby boom generation who felt alienated from their own identities. Marvel's other nuclear hero, and the most popular one during the period, was Spider-Man. Peter Parker, an introvert, thin teenage boy who was from a baby boom generation, turned into a hero with amazing powers after he was bitten by a nuclear radiation-infected spider. Marvel introduced other heroes like Ant-Man, Thor, Iron Man, and X-Men with the same principles. Marvel's new heroes were nervous, complicated characters with a list of deficiencies whose human aspects were magnified and were distinguished from the flawless characters before. The baby boom generation changed society. Following social injustices, the Vietnam War, racism, and the assassination of their popular president, Kennedy, the generation triggered a social revolution and questioned American values and causes. During those years, the Cold War reached its pinnacle. The Soviet influence in Vietnam increased, and the U.S. did not want to lag behind the rivalry. People in the U.S. took to the streets to protest the Vietnam War. But the most important superhero in the hero-making industry in the U.S. concurrent with the Vietnam War was Iron Man, whose real name was Tony Stark. The Vietnam War, with its huge casualties and costs, was one of the shameful decisions in the eyes of Americans, and the opposition had snowballed. Society needed to be convinced. Someone had to sympathize with the people who had lost their sons and daughters. It was Iron Man who was tasked to do so. In the 1960s, he initially supported the U.S. Army's involvement in the Vietnam War, arguing that the U.S. will make a lot of money selling weapons.
For your consideration,
but gradually, he faced many changes. He was increasingly disillusioned with U.S. foreign policy. In the mid-1970s, he expressed remorse for the deaths of people who were killed by the weapons that he made and said he will take revenge for the people who lost their lives, especially for ignorant people like himself.
I saw young Americans killed by the very weapons I created to defend them and protect them, and I saw that I had become part of a system that is comfortable with zero accountability.
Hey, Ben.
What happened over there?
I had my eyes open. I came to realize that I have more to offer this world than just making things that blow up. And that is why, effective immediately, I am shutting down the weapons manufacturer division until such a time as I can decide what the future of this company will be, what direction it should take, one that I'm comfortable with and is consistent with the highest.
The change in his character was a symbol of change in American society
that had become aware of its own identity. The enemies of the superheroes were no longer the Germans, Japanese, communists, or any other foreign entity. The main enemy was inside the United States. During this period, the protests by people of color against racial discrimination spread. Leaders like Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. turned into the symbols of resistance against the U.S. structure. The protests were at their highest after the assassination of Malcolm X in 1965. The incidents made Marvel create its first black character named the Black Panther. The scandal caused by President Richard Nixon, his resignation, and high inflation and unemployment rates made things worse.
In Washington, a break-in at the Watergate Hotel was found to involve five men in the pay of the committee to re-elect President Nixon. The burglar's target was the office of the chairman of the Democratic Party. The story was to make the names of two young local reporters from the Washington Post.
The catastrophe following Nixon's corruption case and the Watergate scandal gripped American rulers by the collar. They had realized that public opinion needed to calm down. And just like in the past, the superheroes were the best options. In one of the comic stories in this period, Captain America, with its fake copy, namely the Captain America in the 1950s, who fought for the U.S. Army, tells himself, "I've never fought with my own demonic part. A man with patriotic dreams, I'm responsible for the evil he did." Captain America was fighting with a sinister empire that wanted to take control of the U.S. In the end, he captured head of the White House, and by removing his mask, he realized the U.S. president was the head of the evil group. The stories about disgraced Nixon administration. This time, unlike the previous times, the captain didn't become happy after achieving victory, and he abandons the fight. He loses faith in Americans and chooses to become a stateless man. He says, "I've done things that I don't take pride in anymore, but I always tried to serve my country well. Now I can see that the government is serving itself." The bitter taste of those days made Spider-Man stories bitter. Something rare happened in Spider-Man. Mary Jane, Spider-Man's fiancé, was killed in a fight. Spider-Man blamed himself for Mary Jane's death and never stopped reprimanding himself following the incident. It was similar to how Americans felt about their government. Marvel adopted this line and made social criticism in its stories. DC also tried to become aligned with social developments to some extent. So, it introduced a real hero against the power structure in America in its stories. He was the greatest and the eternal boxer, Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali won the Olympic gold medal at the age of 20. He was always against the government because of the oppression against the black community. And because of his stance, he didn't join the army, so he wouldn't be forced to fight for the U.S. Army in Vietnam. Muhammad Ali was a symbol of resistance against U.S. dominance, and he had become an international figure. And DC used the popular hero. In one of the stories, Superman, who is a symbol of America, was defeated by Muhammad Ali in a boxing bout. Later, they made up a team to save the planet from aliens. In the end, Muhammad Ali wins in a boxing competition against the aliens, and Earth was saved. The pictorial story became the best-selling comic in the late 1970s. After Ronald Reagan took office in the 1980s, he made the government smaller but expanded the army. The conflict with the Soviets escalated, and American citizens' nationalistic support boosted thanks to professional media techniques. Reagan, who was formerly a movie star, knew very well how to act like a hero. Amid the Soviet threats and the Cold War, many people were scared of widespread crime. The Reagan administration was an avid proponent of individualism and consumerism, while the population was more scared of the violence. In Night of Darkness, there's a character of the president in the city of Gotham. It shows a cartoon of Reagan and his nationalistic speech.
Brave American forces are now engaged in direct combat with Soviet troops in Corto Maltese. Now those Soviets would like to see us turn our tails and run, but we've got to protect our interest, stand up for freedom. So don't you fret, we've got God on our side. Or the next best thing, anyway.
While his city was about to collapse because of injustice, in the real world, on December 22, 1984, a citizen from New York named Bernard Goetz shot thieves with 4 bullets to defend himself. People sympathized with him, and the court that had already indicted Goetz acquitted him. He became the symbol of a person who has provided security and safety for himself in a chaotic world. He saved himself through his acts of violence. The situation provided comic books with sufficient ammo, and new characters stepped in. In response to the world of violence, 3 characters, namely Punisher, Daredevil, and Logan, tortured their enemies through the most violent methods and would kill them after they lost a lot of blood.